Grantham.
Here.
Councilmember Melody Demerit.
She will be a half hour late. She has a class.
Councilmember William Pierce.
Shirley Lyon. I know we did introduce her by name at the last meeting. She was not here, but Shirley, it's welcome and thank you for being on our board. At this time, I'll open the meeting to public comment. In the spirit of a discussion that we had, I believe at our last meeting about allowing people to speak on each subject, we'd like to ask the people in the audience to keep their, under public comments, we'd like you to keep those public comments to items that are not on the agenda. You will be given an opportunity to speak on each of the items on the agenda at the time we discuss them. And with that, if anyone has public comment regarding things that are not on the agenda, now would be the time to come up. State your name for the record, and please try to keep your comments to about 3 minutes. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Matthew Fleming. I live at 2083 Seaview, Morro Bay. I've been a resident of Morro Bay for 15 years, and I'm also the chair of the San Luis Bay Surfrider chapter for the last seven. And I decided to take a just very direct approach as a member of this community and as an individual who does represent a lot of individuals who surf as well. But I spend many, many hours out in the water and many, many hours being sick from being out in the water. And it's not exact science, but there is no question that one time when I messed up my ankle from surfing and I was out for 2 months in the height of the wave season in the winter, I was healthy the whole time. And so over the years, I have noticed a pattern of when I surf, and if I'm not very, very careful and I don't do an incredible regime to try to get the water out of my ears and my sinuses, I tend to come down with something. And I don't know all the reasons that I might be getting sick out there, but I do know that I would like every possible reason to be addressed if we have the capability of doing so. And I think that that ultimately is a belief that most surfers and water users would cross the treatment plant off the list of possible reasons. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
I have a quick point of order. We have several. Excuse me. Angela Jaiswal with NRDC. I have a quick point of order. I know that, Mr. Enns, you just said that you'd like the comments related to the agenda item. And one of the items that's being discussed today is the upgrade of the plant and what kind of upgrade that is. I don't know if we should talk about them now or if we should wait until it's raised.
What I'd like you to do, if it's agreeable with you, would be to wait for Carollo to give their report. Let's see what they have to say. Then we'll get some comments from the board here, and then we'll open it up to public.
Okay.
Joey?
Joey Ricano, the California Ocean Outfall Group, dedicated to ending waivers of the Clean Water Act, like the one this board uses to dump dirty sewage. I have three items that I'd like to talk about that are not related to tonight's issues. Number one, I recently was demonstrating at the Winter Bird Festival, which is the third year in a row I've had to do this. I felt compelled. And, you know, it just seemed to me that we were having a dichotomy here. There are many dichotomies. One of the dichotomies was a situation where our mayor of Morro Bay, Janice Peters, who is a very nice young lady that I actually am very fond of. However, as far as an environmental ethic, I don't believe that she'd be my role model. She is the head of staff for the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival, and so I thought I'd protest that fact. And what happened was I was punched in the nose by a friend of hers named Hank Roth. And I wanted to make sure that everyone knew that even though he's a police employee, that that does not reflect poorly in any way on the police department. Another thing I wanted to mention was the seeming conflict of interest of CSD President Robert Enns. Mr. Enns cuts corners, saves money by dumping dirty sewage that spreads disease. And at the same time, his wife, Lynn Enns, is the chair of the Health Commission, whose sworn duty it is, and mission statement, to stop the spread of disease. That's a dichotomy that we need to address.
Indulgence a little bit. I'm sick. I really need to go home. So I'm going to make it very short. My name is Steve Shimmick. I'm the executive director of the Otter Project. And it's got to be a little uncomfortable for you guys. You know, I mean, out-of-towners coming in and telling you what to do. And in some ways, I apologize for that. But in other ways, I just want to remind you that what you're doing is discharging into, you know, the public resource, discharging into the public water. 53 sea otters washed ashore dead in Estero Bay in 2006. The primary cause of death was disease, a variety of diseases. That's 20% of all the collected mortality that was found on the coast in 2006, 20%. And yet this area only represents about 6% of the sea otter population. There's one scientific paper out that actually calls kind of this generalized region a mortality sink. It's the place where sea otters go to die. Those are my words. Mortality sink is the words used in the paper. What I think this tells us is that the communities around Estero Bay have a responsibility to clean up their discharge, clean it up quickly, as soon as possible, and as clean as possible. So I ask you to upgrade as quickly as possible and upgrade to tertiary. Thank you. And I apologize for going. I realize I'm out of order, but thank you.
Quite all right. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, with that, we'll go ahead with the consent calendar. Anyone wishing to pull items for separate discussion? Betty?
I'd like to pull the minutes, please.
Very good. Anyone else? I'd like to pull item 2, the status report on the permit renewal process. If nothing else, a motion would be in order to approve items A3 and A4. Moral Bay, do you want to go first?
Can I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Very
not.
Good. Cayucas?
So moved.
Motion. Motion and a second. Shirley was the second. Nat was the first. It was the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Track. I just wanted to clarify, is they the NRDC, or is they our plant, or
where are you again?
I'm on page 2.
Right.
Under A4.
And what's in?
The second paragraph.
Okay.
The second sentence. Keo said they are on a separate track. I just wanted to clarify what they is.
They is the permit renewal process and the upgrade process. The permit renewal process presently is in the hands of the regulatory agencies. US EPA and US Fish and Wildlife are still in consultation on the balanced indigenous population question, and the upgrade process is proceeding ahead of schedule at this point, and they're two independent tracks, so they don't necessarily relate to each other than if they were to renew the permit, mm-hmm. We would probably have a settlement agreement with regional board.
Okay. Then could I ask that the minutes be replaced, have the word they replaced with permit renewal process and upgrade process?
Okay.
And I guess that would make it on separate tracks?
Right.
And then I have one other small one on the back page. Under C1, that first line, it says, Susan Slayton introduced the item, noting the city made an error on the invoice. And that says, and it and should. Do I just delete the second and? Will that make it make sense? Okay. So with those two corrections, I would move approval of the minutes.
I think Mr. Enns wanted to do something, too.
I have one more question while we're on that. Go back to page 2, A4, the first paragraph. And it's asking about the NRDC referring to our upgrade schedule as being 9.5 years when it's actually been changed to 8. And then, Bruce, in that next sentence there, you say you were sure that the NRDC is aware of the change but felt they would use every possible opportunity to make them look as bad as possible. And I don't think you meant the NRDC, so... A couple of things we could do here. One is, since NRDC is here, we can ask them if they're aware of the change to make that clear. And then I was thinking it's to make us look as bad as possible. Is that the way that's supposed to be worded?
Yeah, I think it would have more correctly been worded. We'd use every possible opportunity to make the
application originally. There is an upgraded time schedule, and I have not seen a schedule that's actually 8 years. I've seen one that's over 8 years that's 8 years and I think 4 months. So I haven't seen one that's 8 years. If there is one that is 8 years, I would like to see that.
But you know it's not 9.5 years.
Right, and I don't know where most recently where you've heard us say 9.5 years. I mean, we've been...
What document was that in last time?
No, this is a matter of something that happened 2 months ago. Yeah. So.
So as when the change was made, we've been referring to it as over 8 years, or sometimes, as the board does, has said 8 years, or you know, over 8 years in that sense.
Thank you very much.
I would appreciate if that were changed, because those are not the intentions of NRDC to make the JPA look poorly. We are trying to do something here for the environment and for the coastal waters in the region.
Okay, with that, I would just ask that that item be changed to the them, changed to the JPA. Any questions? Betty? Okay.
I had a comment here. Just following on her comment that I don't think it's good. This is a public record of this process. And I think that we're making a rather subjective guess at what their intentions were when we say to make them look as bad. I think we can say, you know, KEO is sure the NRDC is aware of the change, but that everything after but is just what Mr. KEO is feeling. And I don't think I want a subjective opinion like that in the minutes of the record, unless... And I wasn't at the meeting, but I watched it the other night or last night on DVD, and I don't remember that sense of it coming from you.
I remember almost the exact sentence.
The exact sentence. Okay.
Then. Well, we could certainly ask Mr. Keogh if that's how he felt.
Well, I would, you know, I would refer back to the minutes. I mean, that's my personal opinion, but if that's, you know, if you want to strike that subjective comment out of the record, it doesn't bother me.
I'm fine with it, just as long as we put the JPA in there. Okay. Would Morbey like to make a motion for approval of the minutes as amended?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None.
Okay. Cayuca, same motion.
Approved as amended.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye. Aye. It's unanimous. Okay. Thank you. That is specific to the permit renewal process, and I'd ask Bruce to elaborate on that just a little bit.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the permit renewal process and the upgrade process are really two separate tracks right now. So the upgrade process is proceeding per the eight-year time schedule that you adopted in April of last year. Actually, we're ahead of that schedule at this point because of the recommendation from the council and the district board to try and get that process done as quickly as possible. The permit renewal process, as I said, is still sort of in between U.S. EPA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife at this point, and regional board is actually waiting. Their staff is waiting for them to come to a decision before they schedule a permit renewal hearing again.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. With that,
Mr. Enns,
yes.
Would this be the time to ask? Then I have a memory that EPA offered to do some kind of conflict resolution between us and NRDC and others. Is this part of that, or is this a different item?
I would ask Tim Carmel to comment on that. Tim is our district counsel.
Again, Councilmember Windholz, could I ask you to restate your question?
Yeah. It seems like we were having loggerheads from NRDC, the JPA, the community, and that the EPA said that they would step in and do some kind of mediation between the JPA and the NRDC. And is that part of what this is about, or is that a separate item?
That's not related to this status report, nor the sentence in that staff report.
Okay.
There was, several months ago, an attempt to try to bring the parties together for a mediation. I think that frittered out probably because at this point in time, we're all waiting for the biological assessment, which is really a prerequisite to moving along, at least from our perspective. It's a very critical component. And I think funding, to some extent, ran out with regard to that item. So that's kind of where it left, okay. Although there may be an attempt to resurrect the mediation.
Okay. So then just for the public's benefit, what this is saying is we're still waiting on that biological study, and when that's done, then the Water Board will move on our permit.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Business presentation by Corollo Engineers. David, will you, do you want to start, or Tracy? And I would like you to introduce the Corollo staff and your new member back here. The
I'm Dave Stringfield with Corollo Engineers, consulting on your work. And tonight we'll be talking about secondary treatment and, you know, some of the aspects of that, as well as talking about corrosion. And I'm starting to give the talk, so I'll quit. But this is Tracy Clinton, who'll be giving the presentation. And I've got Eric Casillas, who's a project engineer on the project, carrying most of the water. And I'd like to introduce a student intern we brought from who's working as an intern from University of Pacific with us, Steve Gerard, and he's here to see how boards work and how we interact with boards. So with
sorry, Steve.
Tell him to tell us.
Yeah. So with that, Tracy will make the presentation.
Very good. Thank you, David.
I'm a little shorter, so I'll lower this. Honorable Mayor and Council members and Honorable Chairman and Board members, thank you very much for allowing us to come this evening and present our latest findings on the Wastewater Treatment Plant Facility Master Plan, public meeting number 4. Tonight's agenda, we're going to talk about the background and the process. I'm going to present an overall meeting schedule, attendees' roles, what everybody's roles are in the process. Three technical topics we're going to cover tonight, and those include the floodplain impacts, what we call subsoil stabilization, and also secondary treatment. Then we'll go to questions and answers and next steps. So the goal of the facility master plan is to adopt the recommended wastewater treatment plant upgrades alternatives by April 2007. And for the City Council and District Board to adopt a final wastewater treatment facility master plan by June 2007. So why is a facility master plan needed? Since July 2002, the Regional Board has urged the City and District to upgrade the plant discharge permit. In April 2006, to come and present that information as it's developed in what we're calling topic format, at these public meetings for three purposes: to inform, to gain input, and to make decisions. Decisions are needed to keep the process moving and in order to meet the schedule that's been approved. So we're going to discuss the topic being presented, obtain agreement as needed, summarize the issues to be further clarified and resolve them, incorporate them in the draft and final master plan. So our schedule that we've been working with so far, tonight you'll see highlighted item number 4, the full secondary. That's what we're going to present and talk about tonight. We have 3 more meetings planned. One is to discuss the different alternatives. What we've presented so far to date has been portions of the plant process and what would be occurring, but not the whole alternatives together. And then to have the alternative selection, and that we're looking for some action from the board, and to adopt the final facility master plan. So the project status to date, we've been provided discretion to retire the old 1950s facilities. We've agreed on a design flow of 1.5 MGD to be shared by the 2 communities. The electrical study has been completed. The outcome points to a reduced rehabilitation cost, which is good news. The notice to proceed has been issued for the corrosion study, and we actually plan to have the corrosion expert on site this month. The revenue programs for both the city and the CSD have been started. So our role for tonight for the City Council, District Board, and all the attendees is to please listen, ask questions, provide input, make decisions, be respectful of others' questions and input. It's always a good reminder. Again, our 3 topics for tonight are the floodplain impacts, subsoil stabilization, and secondary treatment. So the floodplain impacts. First, we're going to talk that FEMA maps did not exist when the wastewater treatment plant was initially designed. Federal Emergency Management Association Agency prepared discussions for the facility plan so we can have some text in this facility plan. We've already got them under contract. They're part of the scope. And they are also going to look, give us a budget for an in-depth study of what would actually be needed and such when we would do the pre-design later on. So here's a map showing our floodplain boundaries. The tan color, which you see A14, any of the A zones are, again, in that 100-year floodplain. This B zone is not considered in that area. We talked about it earlier, and it looks, you know, this part of the plant and Atascadero Road, what we thought is maybe there's a berm along this area enough that put it outside of the floodplain zone. We don't know that that's going to be confirmed with the floodplain study. I wanted to show you an example of a wall, and this is sort of hard to see, but I have a detailed one that I'll show you right after this. Right in the back here, you see a bit of a dark line, and it's also in the back here. This is the CMC facility that's right down the road from you. And these are the oxidation ditches, which is one of our alternatives we're going to talk about tonight. But what this wall actually looks like, it's a dark wall that's actually driven down into the ground to keep the flooding out of an area. It's pretty common. These are done in different areas up north. I know in Benicia and that area, and obviously CMC had to put it right along sort of by the river so that the plant doesn't get inundated in the high waters. So now we'll talk about the subsoil stabilization. The purpose is to identify potential impacts on the design and costs. The subsoil stabilization was performed in 1982 under some structures, and again, I'll show you a map of where it's been already performed on the site. We worked with Hayward Baker, a geotechnical contractor, for budget costs and subsoil stabilization for the current expansion. And we'll add about $1 million to the cost of the recommended project to cover subsoil stabilization. What he told us is at this time, it's about $1 million an acre or so. So we'll be including that in our costs.
I'm sorry. Are you going to keep talking about that, subsoil stabilization, what that means?
Yes.
Okay.
These areas shown on this map, here's Atascadero Road, and they put in native backfill. So it's actually stabilizing that to make a stronger, better base for the structures. Uh, So secondary treatment. The secondary treatment capacity I'm going to talk about for the existing facilities. The different options, secondary treatment options, we're going to discuss those. And then go into a bit of analysis of the secondary alternatives, including some costs, regulatory compliance, and operational factors. I have to have our little disclaimers here, as we know the lawyers are present. The scope of this chapter only includes the rehabilitation or construction of the structures pertaining to the headworks and the primary and secondary treatment processes. What that means is the costs do not include the solids handling or disinfection that I'm going to go over tonight. So we're just focusing on the secondary treatment costs. As I said, the next meeting will bring all the costs together, and you'll see a complete package. What we wanted to show you here tonight is just these alternatives and the costs that are related to secondary treatment. Melody?
It's Betty.
Oh, Betty, I'm sorry.
But soils and the disinfection are part of a secondary process, aren't they? Or are they not?
The solids handling?
The point that you're saying is not included tonight, are they not necessarily part of secondary treatment normally?
Yes, they are.
Okay,
they're needed as processes, but secondary treatment is considered more for the water process at the plant.
Okay, I get it.
Yes.
Hi, just a question. Would you prefer us to have our questions after your presentation or as they come up?
Either, whatever you prefer. If it's during the presentation, I might need Dave or somebody to come up and answer, but I'll try.
I just have one question then concerning the wall.
Yes.
The depth of that in the ground is what? How far down underground does that wall go?
Depends. Depends on how far it needs to go. 10 to 20 feet.
Okay, thanks.
While we're on the wall, I don't. If you're in a floodplain already that's low lying and you're putting up a wall to keep the water out, don't you still have water inside though that's building up? Or are we elevating the plant?
You're not elevating it. You'd have the water that is generated within the site itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as this water out.
But not and what would be inside.
Right, but the water that's inside the site, actually there's storm basins and storm drains within the plant itself that can handle the water in there. It's just that excess water, not having to treat it also. So why implement secondary treatment? Well, first of all, the future ocean discharge permit will require secondary treatment, which the regional board and the EPA has determined fully protects the ocean environment. This is what the majority of plants throughout California are treating to the standard of. This will also meet the anticipated 30-30 effluent limits of the future permit. The 30-30 refers to BOD and TSS levels, biological oxygen demand and total suspended solids, and that's milligrams per liter. I'll show you another slide on with those numbers on it. So the capacity of the existing facility, the current treatment plant can handle a peak seasonal flow of 0.5 MGD under a new full secondary permit. So it was found to be 0.5 based on modeling we did. The diminished capacity is really attributed to two conditions. One is the higher wastewater strength, as we've talked about in previous meetings. And the second is there's significantly more stringent discharge limits. And again, I'll show you a chart with those numbers, what your limits are now and what you'll be faced with in the future, which is right here. The current permit that Bruce is operating under, you see, has a BOD limitation of 120 and a total suspended solids limitation of 70. The new future limits, which again is common throughout most of the state, is the 30-30. Typically, you design to a more conservative limit so that you're meeting your 30-30 in all conditions. So you don't want to just design right to that edge and be on that border all the time. So we looked at two secondary treatment alternatives. One is alternative one, which is trickling filters and solids contact. That's what the plant currently has. The second one is extended aeration activated sludge. I'm going to discuss both of these and go into information on costs and operations and reliability. So these two options really represent the range of secondary treatment alternatives available for expansion at the treatment plant. So alternative one, trickling filter solids contact. As I said, that's the current practice.
On the third bullet point, diminished capacity can be attributed to, and I don't understand higher wastewater strength. I understand the other significant, more stringent discharge limits, but what does it mean when you say higher wastewater strength?
I'll let Dave explain that. They did quite a bit of work on that.
When they originally designed the treatment plant in the 80s, they, of course, tested what the strength was, and your strength was fairly normal strength domestic sewage. In the time between then and now,
I think you need to define what strength means.
Organic strength, how strong it is, how much organic material, how much how thick the feces is in it, if you will. You know, just how strong it is. It's stronger sewage as far as what's in it that has to be removed.
Why diminished capacity can be attributed to higher wastewater strength?
When we treat the wastewater, like the photo of the trickling filters, we pass it over rocks, and the rocks have a ability to remove a certain amount of that organic material. So if we double the amount of organic material without doubling the flow, we would need many more rocks to handle the strength. So a treatment plant, when we size them, part of the sizing is just on flow, how many gallons. The other is how strong is it. So we put more rocks in to treat a stronger sewage. So getting back where we were is in the 80s, it was a fairly normal strength wastewater. Over the years, there's been water conservation and perhaps other factors that it is much stronger now. And so we have to look at it a little differently now.
Can Bruce I just add comment. To that? That,
yes.
That the strength that he's referring to is when we looked at the flows and loads chapter, we looked at the flow into the plant in terms of gallons per day, and then we looked at total suspended solids and BOD because that's what they're designing off of. In 84, they designed at 280 for suspended solids and BOD, and the numbers that they're looking at now are closer to 410 for suspended.
Some interstage pumping, and you also need digesters. And I'll show you a bit how this would lay out and compared to the other alternative and what they each would need. I think it'll make more sense once I show you both of them. So here's a layout of the plant. The red facilities show what would be required. The yellow facilities here in the middle, which are the trickling filters, primary clarifier, and the existing secondary basin, those would be rehabilitated. And then what we did is we located new facilities, which would be in the purple. To support the trickling filter solids contact, you'd need the purple facilities, which again is a secondary clarifier, primary clarifier, solids contact basin, three new trickling filters. As I said, these yellow round ones in the center here are the existing trickling filters, so we would need these three more. And what I'm showing in green here is an alternate location for those three. So we could either put the three in green or these three in purple. Here's an example of the trickling filter that's currently at the plant. And what it is these are the rocks that Dave was referring to. And the water, the wastewater, comes out, and this spins around. I think Bruce said his daughter calls it the birdie merry-go-round. Because you get birds on here. Obviously, it's open to the atmosphere, so there can be odors. The rocks actually have media attached to them, so as the wastewater goes through the rocks, The organics are attaching to the media, so it's actually removing the organics. As I showed you, we'd need the existing basins, the two trickling filters, and then we'd need three more added for this alternative. So the costs for just the trickling filters, solids contact, the construction cost for this process, which means the new basins and rehabilitating the old ones, is approximately $13.8 million. Again, this is planning level. This is the first stage. The construction costs, what we found when we compared them, are about $800,000 less than the oxidation ditch, which really at this level of planning, when you're comparing...
$22,397,000, because there's the initial cost that we lay in there, and then we lay in all these other costs, and then we have the real cost. So the real cost isn't actually 13.8, right?
Right. I think you're referring to the project cost?
Yes.
Which includes more the contingencies and that sort. This is just the construction cost. So the project cost would include the engineering, the legal, the admin,
so
those
types. Wouldn't you think that when we look at these alternatives and we're trying to make a judgment of which one we prefer, we would look at that highest number, not the original lowest number?
Well, in the next meetings, you'll really look at them all together with all the different criteria. And I've got a summary table at the end of the presentation, which gives us a side-by-side comparison. So we're not just considering costs. We're actually considering operations and power and the other factors that Bruce has to work with.
And I think that the cost that Melody is referring to has to do with, and I'm not exactly, I'm still getting my hands on present value. You have a project cost, and then you have, I believe it's a 20-year equation that says if you factored in O&M, electrical, and all the components over a 20-year period, that's where you'd get to the higher cost. And I think on the project cost, they're trying to look simply at what it takes to construct it at this point in time, so that you can lay out a comparison of what they gave you last time with these costs.
So then you mean dollars out right now that I've got to find right now are the project costs?
I think that's the correct answer, is it not?
I'm looking at total project costs, which is that, and that's what I should look at right now is the dollars out of my pocket right now when I build the thing.
To build the whole project, it would be the project cost.
So I don't have to look at present values.
That just brings it to today's dollar value.
Okay.
And I might add, I think just from the way I've been looking at these, is that if you look at not the present value cost, but if you look slightly above that number, you're going to see a total O&M annual cost.
Right.
I think that number you can use to compare to say, does alternative A cost more to run on an annual basis than alternative B? And when you look at the MBR, you'll see that those O&M costs are significantly higher due to power, I believe.
So some of the regulatory requirements with the trickling filter solids contact process, it includes approximately 50 separate components. And as I said, the necessary support facilities, you need the primary clarifiers, as I showed you on the site plan, the interstage pumping, and also anaerobic digesters, which would be existing. So we would have to rehabilitate the existing digesters. So potential negative impacts requires the continued use and rehabilitation of the digesters. The other one does not, so I'll show you that. So that's we consider that a little negative since the other alternative doesn't have it. Again, possible odor source. Morro Bay has not received a lot of odor complaints. However, in other places, trickling filters are known to create odors and such. Potential positive impacts. Primary and trickling filter sludge is more easily composted. And again, I'll show you a table at the end with a comparison side by side of these. So the odors and flies are not now a major problem, as I said. If odor becomes an issue, the primary and trickling filters could be covered. That's common at a lot of plants. The covers, however, are not included right now in our current dollar estimate. So when I gave you those dollars, it doesn't include covers because we're assuming you would continue not to have the odor problems. Alternative 2. This is extended aeration activated sludge process. some of its characteristics. This is currently practiced at several treatment plants in the area, including the California Men's Colony, the picture I showed you. I'm going to show you another picture of the city of Pismo Beach, also that's a brand new plant, and Bruce and some other staff have gone down and visited that plant. They're easier to operate than the trickling filters, solids, contact. They're a little more forgiving in your process. So as you're getting higher loads, higher flows maybe, the oxidation ditch in this is a little easier to operate. There are fewer facilities. You just need the headworks and go right into the oxidation ditch. So we don't need all those other facilities that we do with alternative one. This alternative really produces a higher, better quality effluent, so it exceeds the requirements for the future discharge permit, and I'll show you that. Here's a site plan for the facilities. So again, the red would be the required facilities. The yellow is the rehabilitated facility, which is the secondary clarifier. The purple, we'd put in these are the oxidation ditches, and we'd add a new secondary clarifier. And the green on the bottom is an alternate location for whether the need for the sludge drying beds or whether we'd need them that many or change the process. Bruce, you want to add to that?
Well, it has to be constructed before you can demolish the existing facility. So if in this, in either any of the alternatives, you have to continue to run the plant as is. So we would need to keep those facilities until the very end. And like she said, depending on the solids handling issues, you'd have to determine where you'd want to locate the ditch.
Yes.
On trickling filters,
do the anaerobic, does the anaerobic supply the digesters, do they depend on sunlight, open air, oxygen to do their thing?
Because, the trickling filters?
Yeah.
No, because we said we could cover them.
That's why I was asked. Okay. And what's involved in rehabbing the digester?
Did we look at the exact extent here? Depending on sometimes the structure of the wall itself, in one of the earlier meetings, we actually showed some of the facilities and how old they were, depending on its age, what would need to be done when it was constructed as far as seismic considerations, and then just the integrity of it, corrosion, that sort, coating it, and...
Okay. We're not recharging any anaerobic properties or anything like this. We're just checking out the walls for corrosion and rust and size. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So here's an example of what we call the oxidation ditch, which is basically the extended aeration activated sludge process. These two long basins, as you saw in the other pictures, these are the oxidation ditch. So the water, the wastewater comes from the headworks and goes through one side of the oxidation ditch and back to the other side, and then goes through the secondary clarifiers. So it's a smaller footprint. As you saw in both the site plans, like Bruce said, we have to locate the facilities away from what's already existing so he can maintain the current operation of the plant. So it would be nice if we could just demo those and build the new ones right on top, but sorry. So, extended aeration activated sludge costs. The construction cost for this process is approximately $14.6 million. Again, we feel that that's very comparative at this level of estimating, about a 5% difference, which when we add all the project costs together in the end will be something to forgiving than trickling filters. It can be overloaded in both your flows and your loads. Some of the regular... Oh, I'm sorry.
In the alternative one you talked about, you might need covers.
Yes.
If the odor was bad. In your report, your choice of words were a significant cost, and significant has no bounds on it. So I'm assuming it really could be very costly. And if any, are we talking millions, half million, 2 million? I mean, you know, it's just
2 million.
Two to three million. That's significant. Okay.
There's a lot because you're covering all the trickling filters and then all the other contact basins also. So there's quite a bit in the primary and the secondary process to be covered.
Is that two total or per unit?
Total. $2 to $3 million total. So our regulatory requirements for the oxidation ditch, advanced secondary treatment, the BOD-5 and the TSS concentrations produced out of this process run about 1 to 5 milligrams per liter. If you remember, I said we designed for about 2020, and your future permit's about 3030. So you're well within your permit range, and this effluent's much considered higher quality. It does remove nitrogen from the wastewater stream, which, as I said, is not an anticipated regulatory concern at this time, but it's important when considering water recycling.
You're saying that we can meet the regulatory requirements with alternative one.
Yes.
But we could be 5 times better than that with alternative two.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
The types of processes are that different. Trickling filters are a little bit older technology, but they still obviously works. So our operational factors, there's less than 20 separate components. Again, that requires less operator attention, less maintenance, less removal and change out. Again, it easily accommodates varying flows and loads like July 4th or big weekends when a lot of people come to town. Produces a more stable sludge that does not require continued use of the digesters. So we could get rid of the digesters. And the odors generated are described as musty and not really offensive. I don't know if you've gone down and visited either the Pismo Beach or this California Men's Colony. You might want to do that and see what the surrounding is. I didn't yellow the ones that were better so that it was easier to kind of look at this. The ease of operation, again, it's easier with the oxidation ditch. Utilization of the existing infrastructure is better with alternative one because we could reuse facilities that are there. They would have to be rehabilitated, but there is more use in facilities. Similarity to the existing process, obviously one is similar because that's what they have, and the second one is not similar. As I mentioned, the oxidation ditch really accommodates varying flows and loads easier. Constructability is about the same for the two. Vectors, flies, that sort of thing. There's more potential with the trickling filters. So the other one has lower potential. Noise, comparable with the two. Odors, really, again, lower with the oxidation ditch. And the sludge stability is good with the oxidation ditch. Yes.
Okay. For people that say they want secondary treatment now and they want to, for lack of a better word, plummet for tertiary in the future, then am I correct in saying alternative number two would be the way to go and not one because that one wouldn't be feasible for transferring to tertiary?
You could transfer either to tertiary. It's going to be harder to meet your requirements, possibly with the trickling filters.
With
again,
the number one, yeah.
Yes, with yeah. Alternative one. Alternative two removes the nitrogen, and with the if there is a nitrogen limitation or requirement, which there generally is with the recycled water end use, comparing it to the groundwater basin in the background. So I can't think of anywhere in the state, maybe Dave, you know of some, where they actually use trickling filter effluent or reuse the water. Most of the processes have switched to oxidation ditches or something, because as we know, regulations don't seem to be getting laxer. They always get stricter. Mm-hmm. So a summary of the trickling filter solids contact. Again, it does provide the level of treatment necessary to meet the future permit. It's familiar to the treatment plant staff. There is, however, potential for odors and flies. And it does require more associated facilities, which, again, correlates to more operators and time and such.
I have a few questions. See if I can get things out of the way here a little bit. Okay, on these pictures of both of those plans, you have this oxidation ditch and then you have this optional site for it. Mm-hmm. Is the optional site based on the probability that we'll still need those sludge basins, or why are we planning for this optional thing outside the boundaries?
Again, as Bruce said, we have to keep the existing facilities operating, so we have to put them in those areas. Depending on how the full alternative comes together, mm-hmm. and the use of the solids, sludge drying beds also, that adds in a factor. So we had been told that that was property that we could look at as a possibility to expand onto if the plant wishes to.
Is there any possibility, since you call it an alternative, I'm wondering if you were playing with the possibility, because I look at the sludge basins here, and I've been down there, and very often at least some of them are empty, but probably to Bruce, is there any possibility that we could build this with the oxidation ditch going in here and that your sludge could be handled over here if we picked the right time of year, for example, like drier months or non-tourist season months?
Well, I think in my mind, the big picture is what solids handling alternative you want to go with in the long run. And that's sort of, you know, there's a lot of, most of the people in this room are probably more interested in what's actually being discharged to the ocean. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of worried about both ends because we do have to have a solids handling facility and we do have to have some place to take the solids. One of the, when we discussed solids handling at a couple meetings back, the ditch actually produces in an aerobic environment a very stable sludge. But it is neither Class B nor Class A in terms of regulatory criteria that the state and EPA look at. So you would have a subclass B product that you would have to ship probably to Kern County to either be composted or potentially incinerated if they decide to go that route. If that avenue gets shut down, we will have to react in some way if we continue, you know, and it's probably not going to be composted on site. Certainly if they chose to build the facility, they've discussed mechanical dewatering. I would assume they could maybe push the mechanic has a very long retention time for the solids. So they come out, they're consumed by the microorganisms. They come out very stable. They settle in the secondary clarifier. They're taken from the secondary clarifier straight to, I believe, a centrifuge or a belt press, which reduces them from like probably a 2-3% solids, which is pretty much water, to about a 20% solids. They are immediately removed and trucked to the Central Valley. So you have to have either have to have sludge drying beds. Right now, we take our solids, we put 3-5% in the beds. The water evaporates out, we collect the solids, and we either compost or send it to the valley.
And if we went for something like alternative 2, secondary, and you call it advanced secondary, and we came to agreements and all this other stuff about it, several other issues, but put those issues aside when you're working with two joint entities like this, what's the fastest that one of those plants can be built, given this site? What is the absolute fastest you could build one of those, suggesting that we would be agreeable?
18 months to 2 years is really reasonable.
And not from today, but that's from the day that we actually go through all the other little hoops, the EPA and... Okay.
The notice to proceed contractor there on site, right. Or not on site, but starting.
Does that include design?
No.
Construction.
Construction.
Just construction. Okay. And then.
Yeah, what about the other one? Is that same time period? Same time period, okay.
Alt one? Yeah, I'm not too attracted to alternative one because it seems like it's the same thing we have, just bigger. Trickling filters or something. And then the last question would be, I was watching about the drugs and pharmaceuticals, and I know that Bruce was talking in the last meeting about the things that go through people, and there's plenty of that stuff that goes through people and then through the plants. And is it only the tertiary treatments that treat for that, or do either alternative one and two also treat for pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, hormones, those kinds of things?
Originally, wastewater plants haven't been designed to treat for pharmaceuticals and endocrine disruptors in the state.
So neither of the alternative one or two, neither of the secondary ones would remove those kinds of things like hormones, endocrine disruptors?
It removes some to a certain level, and the ditch is better because you are getting the better removal. I showed 98% versus the 95%, so you do get more removal of the solids, so you're removing it from the water.
And with tertiary treatment, we get even better removal of those kinds of things.
Theoretically.
We don't know. Theoretically, but we don't really know.
Theoretically. There's the Water Reuse Foundation has conducted some studies showing through the different treatment processes different removals. And, again, there's 85,000 compounds, some natural, some not. So.
And the last question would be, do these total costs that I've now figured out include the cost of the flood wall and include the cost of the compaction?
This time, did the others in? No.
So we're adding on another $1 million for the compaction, and we don't know for the wall.
That's correct.
I have one question. If we have to, well, not since we are operating the plant as we're building the new plant, the new facilities that we're building will be in a different location.
Correct.
They will not be moved back onto the plant because they're built where they are.
Correct.
So we'll have this other empty space.
Correct.
What do we do with that empty space? Is that planned for? Or is it just empty? We're just reconfiguring the shape of the facility. So
yes, you'd be reconfiguring it. Those structures that wouldn't be used in the process could be removed. They could be left there in place. Other plants generally sometimes will leave them there. Sometimes the choice is, because you can use those basins sometimes later on, and as we're finding looking at other plants, as they've added on processes and they've left basins, when we go in to look at adding tertiary, you can think that could be an extra storage basin if it's revamped, that sort of thing. So it would be up to the final contract and to Bruce whether those get filled in, removed at the time when the new ones are being built, or just left there.
I've got one question on the composting, Bruce. Is there any financial value or loss of value in whether we do composting ourselves or have it all sent away?
I knew somebody was going to ask me that question. I think from a cost standpoint, I don't know that. I mean, if you look at the solids handling chapter, in order to rehabilitate the digesters and continue on the composting route and you wanted to compost everything, it would probably cost you $3 million, additional dollars. So I think from a dollar standpoint, I don't know that I can pencil it out. I think there's a societal value to being able to handle your own waste and not ship it out of the county, because potentially the county or the state, counties within the state could shut down people bringing sludge into their county. Kern County.
Dollars of cost? Is
alternative
that what you're
one would require.
Well, am I missing it?
Alternative one would require the use of anaerobic digesters, and you would definitely have to put the $2 million into rehabbing your digesters. If you went with the ditch, you could get away from using your anaerobic digesters and take that material straight, dewater it, and take it straight to the valley.
But if we're trying not to take it to the valley, what's going to be more expensive?
I don't know that at this point in time you can do that cost effectively. I think the composting project's been a great model for people to follow, and it would be nice to see somebody in the county try and, you know, if Los Osos builds a plant and has more room, if we could get it done at Cold Canyon. But I don't know that, you know, I hate to say it, but at the present time, I don't know that when we go through this rehabilitation process, the amount of money that we're talking about, that we can put that extra $3 to $5 million into a project for composting solids on the scale that we do it.
So whichever alternative we choose, there's going to be trucking out of the county. And we could get stuck with that somewhere down the road if they disallow
Yeah, you
it.
Could you could certainly site a 100% composting facility at the treatment plant, and there are costs in Chapter 5 that were presented. But the costs are extreme. I mean, you're talking, you know, on the order of $1 million to $3 million to compost 200 yards or 200 tons of material. And I don't know that with a straight face I can sell that one to the ratepayers.
Thank you.
I have a little confusion then. Right now, what you're producing is a quality sludge. Is that right for composting? So we don't produce a quality B right now.
Right now, what comes out of the digesters is listed as Class B sludge. We meet the federal criteria for Class B. But in order to use it in our county, it has to be Class A.
And that's what you do. You change it and make it into Class A.
Right. It comes out. It goes from our primary clarifiers to the digesters. It's anaerobically digested. Mm-hmm. When it's dried, it meets Class B requirements. So composting takes it to Class A.
And digesters are the ones that change it from B to A?
The digesters take it from raw sludge into Class B.
And the composting changes it from B to A?
That's correct.
And the reason we can't do that in the new plant is because we don't have the space?
Space, and I'm not that familiar with subclass B sludge. I'm not that familiar with what comes out of the oxidation ditch. My understanding is I don't think you could spread it without a significant odor and potentially fly problem. And I think David and Eric might have more information on that from some of the facilities they have in the valley.
Okay.
You know, my concern is that you know, in the long run, you're planning for a 20-year project. And it would be nice to handle the liquids end and the solids end at the same time. As long as, and I have spoken, and I believe David and Eric have spoke to San Joaquin Composting, which is where we send our solids now, they are looking at siting an incinerator in the Central Valley, and actually in numerous locations in the Western United States and Canada, and they feel that that is a better long-term approach to biosolids handling than composting, because there's APCD regulations that are starting to impact them and whatnot, but the solids end of wastewater is in, there's a lot of flux in California right now because people don't know what to do with it. There's a large amount produced in urban areas and they can't land apply it. They don't know how to dispose of it. So there's a lot of creative stuff going on. I look at what LA and Orange County do. They're pushing for Class A. I mean, consistently mm-hmm. those facilities are spending big dough to do that. But they also probably produce in one day what we produce in 1 year. So, you know, we have to balance that out. And unfortunately, I don't think the dollars balance out right now for composting. I would certainly, we will continue to do that as long as we can. But when push comes to shove, I think that the dollar value is going to drive that part of it away.
Just, and my last question, a more stable solid makes for a lower class?
No, not necessarily. It has more to do with detention times in certain processes, and EPA has there's a very extensive set of regulations that says you have to have a certain amount of detention time in an anaerobic digester at a certain temperature with a certain volatile solids reduction. I mean, there's a formula that you can mm-hmm. you can lay out. I think the advantage of the ditch is that you don't need an anaerobic digester, and in our operation right now. We have to run boilers. We have methane gas on site. There's a lot of operator attention that goes into keeping that process alive and healthy. Mm-hmm. So in one sense, it's really a great thing that you could get rid of that aspect of it. It would be a much easier plant to operate. Mm-hmm. I still haven't quite, and Eric and David know my angst. We've talked about it at length. I think you just have to be aware that the solids handling issue is going to come up in the future mm-hmm. in some way.
That was good. Any questions from Cayucas?
It's on schedule with the regional board. The next steps, our next public meeting is March 15th, and we're going to discuss the recommended alternatives, and that's really a discussion meeting so that we can make sure everybody understands what a complete alternative consists of. So the March 15th meeting, several project alternatives will be presented that bring all the different aspects that we've covered in the past four meetings together in the one meeting on the 15th. We'll present the project alternatives, which will include the rehabilitation of the support facilities, the headworks, other facilities we haven't necessarily focused on in the discussions, the secondary and tertiary treatment, biosolids management, and the disinfection, chlorination, dechlorination, the disinfection of the water. So the costs will be presented, will represent the total cost of the treatment plant upgrades. Any questions on the information presented, please contact Bruce Keough. His number and email are shown for your information.
Nat?
Yeah, just a quickie. I got a better feel for what I think are the not only the procurement costs, but the operation and maintenance costs when you look at figures 8.2 and 8.4. I mean, it's just parts count. You know, the more parts you got, the more things can fail. And those two block diagrams really drove things home. And I would recommend people look at those.
Very good. Any other questions of Tracy while she's up here? Okay, seeing none, thank you. David, did you or Eric have any comments you wanted to add at this time?
No, thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any other comments from Cayucas? Any further comments from Morro Bay? Okay, with that, I'd like to open this topic to the public. Those wishing to comment may do so at this time.
Good evening. My name is Michelle Maida, and I'm with the NRDC. I just first wanted to say that we do understand that the plant is often able to treat some or all of its waste to secondary standards. And we can continue to debate the precise nature of the plant's discharge and whether on any given day it's treated to primary or blended or secondary hotspot. And swimmers and surfers routinely get sick in the water here as well. So Morro Bay and Cayucas can wait for a smoking gun to show the link between the plant's discharge and these problems, or you can be on the safe side and just eliminate the primary treated sewage as quickly as it possibly can be eliminated. Morro Bay and Cayucas are two of the last communities in California that are allowed to discharge primary treated sewage. Given that Central Coast sewage treatment plants, all larger than this plant, have upgraded in an average of 5 years, there's a perception that Morro Bay and Cayucas are not doing all they can to protect the region's coastal waters. And there's a perception that if Morro Bay and Cayucas aren't doing all they can to protect coastal waters, they may not be doing all they can to with other water quality issues also. So basically, it boils down to better safe than sorry. And finally, we would suggest that one step you could take towards being on the safe side is to adopt a resolution that we have, which states that the board will place this item on the agenda for its next meeting for a vote to upgrade the plant as soon as possible. And I would just like to pass out something that we've drafted as a proposed resolution for you all. Thank you.
My name is Cal Wilvard. I'm a retired professor of geography from Cal Poly, and I'm representing ECOSLO, the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo County. The sea otter is a fascinating creature. Tourists and locals all love to watch it. It's cute, it's intelligent. But it's a lot more important than just seeing something that's fun to watch. It's a critical component of the coastal ecosystem. The most important point is that the sea otter eats sea urchins. And if it weren't for the sea otter keeping the urchins in check, the urchins would destroy the kelp forest. And the kelp forest is important because that's the home of so many marine species, and especially a nursery for marine species. Also, the kelp forest helps to protect the coastline from erosion. The sea otter's in trouble, though. The numbers are dwindling, would want to do so if they knew about the condition of the water some of the times. Please schedule the upgrading of the sewage treatment plant for just as soon as humanly possible. I realize it costs a lot of money, and I sympathize with the hard decision you folks have to make, but it's very important to go ahead and do this sooner rather than later. It will cost more later, and you'll get rid of really a very noxious irritant along the coast if you do it as soon as possible. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Sandra Brazil, a Morro Bay resident and member of the Ocean Outfall Group. Honorable Mayor and Council members, and Chairman and Board members, the Morro Bay waiver of the Clean Water Act is at least, very least, 25 years old, outdated, obsolete. Think about it. Are you still driving the same car you had 25 years ago? No, probably not. Life has changed tremendously. We have more residents and tourists and much more activity here in our area, more stress on our old water and sewer systems. Technology has advanced so that we have learned more about the toxicity of our sewerage we're dumping. Also, we've learned of seriously harmful nitrates in our drinking water. I urge you to, as soon as possible, to implement a regional area plan that includes clean drinking water and incorporate a full tertiary treatment for our sewerage. Also, we need to keep the contaminants out of our bay and ocean and protect the sea life. Thank you.
Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, friends, friends at home, Joey Ricano, Ocean Outfall Group. You know, one of the things that has always made me incredulous is when I hear my friend Bruce Keough say that this wastewater treatment facility is almost at Clean Water Act standards. You know, what he may really mean is that this wastewater treatment facility is almost at the minimum standards of almost a half a century ago. See, 33 and a half years ago, full secondary treatment was the basement standard. It was the lowest. It amazes me that we are here shooting for the cellar. Now, five-year temporary method to ease into compliance with the 33-year-old law. Then you went and got another waiver, another five-year waiver, another five-year waiver, another five-year waiver. It's abuse. Now, there's only one reason, and it's the three L's, lackluster leadership. Now, when tourists come to Morro Bay, tourists come to surf, swim, and play. They don't come to Morro Bay to come away with hepatitis A. Also, we're not looking at alternative three, a regional plan. Do you know why the Los Osos people aren't here tonight? Because they're at the same exact kind of a meeting 6 miles to the south. It makes no sense at all for us to be doing the same thing in the next town. It would be cheaper, better, and we would be able to come into tertiary standards, which is soon going to be the standard. And in conclusion, and thanks for hearing me out tonight. I appreciate the work that you're doing. It's a difficult issue. But in conclusion, let us pry the $4.8 million out of the Cayuga Sanitary District. They are holding this money illegally in a violation of the arbitrage rule, which forbids joint powers agencies from acting like financial institutions. They are charged with treating the sewage, not with being the Bank of America. I thank you for this opportunity to address you tonight, and go regional.
All right, good evening. My name is Noah Smuckler. I'm a member of the Public Works Advisory Board for the City of Morro Bay. Speaking tonight as a resident of Morro Bay and the vice chair of the San Luis Bay chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. And we appreciate this process that's continued now for quite some time. Many members of our 500-person group here in San Luis Obispo have attended these meetings over time, and they all support the idea of our estuary and our watershed being our most important asset. It's clear that our livelihood and our economic prosperity, our social prosperity, is dependent on the health of our environments, especially the bay and the estuary. It's also clear that both of our communities are suffering from problems with long-term water security and are feeling a lot of challenge and using bioremedial techniques, some of which were outlined tonight and will hopefully be involved with the tertiary plan. We also agree that the composting operation has been a positive success here, an example, and we feel with tours and conversation with the wastewater treatment plant operators that we have a quality team here. And it's time to invest in a plant that will treat this community the way that it needs to be treated for the long term and get this operation going. We support this happening as soon as possible and with an eye towards the future and this future sustainability of this town. We don't like the idea of trucks needing to haul this stuff out of town over the long term, especially because of the economic and environmental damages that would occur with that sort of reliance. We're looking for our community to be leaders and to put Morro Bay on the map by being creative and getting out there and taking care of our most important asset, which is our water, that which comes out of the tap and that which attracts people to this area and is indeed why we are here. So I'm looking forward, and the rest of our board is looking forward to the tertiary alternatives that are going to be presented later on March 15th. And if we were to comment on either of the two proposals tonight, number two was very appealing with the potential for nitrate removal, especially given the recent events that have happened here in Morro Bay with our water supply. And we just need to really be careful here because when we make an investment, we need to have the most bang for our dollar that we possibly can. We don't have the money to waste, and we just need to do a quality project and get that going as soon as possible. So thank you very much.
I guess I have to be taller. Good evening. My name is Pam Hetherington, and I'm the treasurer of the San Luis Bay chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. I want to pick up on something that the presenter mentioned earlier as a result of a question of endocrine disruptors in the wastewater treatment stream. If you are keeping up with any of the news down in Long Beach, you're knowing that the bottom feeding fish are coming up with both ovaries and testes. It's not a normal state for fish. The only place this is coming from, it's coming from the wastewater treatment plant. Full secondary, I hear, down in Long Beach. But yet, the impacts are still in the coast. I would ask you, I beg you, to start thinking about full tertiary at this point, a regional plant, so these things possibly can be dealt with not on a community-by-community basis, but by a regional basis, where they might be more amenable to solutions. I'm really disappointed that there's not more talk of tertiary treatment tonight. It seems like it's off the table, but I guess there is hope for the March 15th meeting. In closing, I just want to remind you that the ocean is a public trust. It's not just yours to take care of. It's all of ours. So you have an obligation that is immense because you're right now making decisions on our behalf. And I think that your decisions have to take into consideration public health, environmental health, and the positions that you uphold. Thank you.
I'd like to follow Pam because she's short and I'm short and I don't have to move the microphone. My name is Margaret Webb. I'm a Morro Bay homeowner and I'm here representing myself. As you may be aware, right now there is a decision pending on a Bureau of Reclamation project that could dispose of 40 years of polluted wastewater by pumping it into Estero Bay from the central San Luis Valley. This decision-making is going on behind closed doors. We are not privy to any of what's going on with that. We were able to make our public comment, but the decision-making will happen behind closed doors. And I want to thank everyone here tonight for bringing this to the light of day and doing your decision-making process out in the bright sunshine and allowing the public to comment on it, and I really appreciate the opportunity. Today, we're talking about an immediate threat. We're not talking about a project that may happen that may dump waste into the Estero Bay. We're talking about municipal sewage that is being dumped into the bay every day. just as this community does not want imported agricultural wastewater degrading the ocean waters, we don't want our own partially treated municipal sewage to continue to pollute. Through small community wastewater grants, Ocean Protection Council funding, and funds such as Proposition 84, 40, and 50, there are appropriate funds available to this project that will help relieve the ratepayer burden. I sincerely hope that you will take advantage of these kinds of funding sources that will help this community and will take out some of the burden. This is
Yukis. I'm also a ocean user, and I would like to basically agree with the previous speakers and put my support behind what they're discussing, which is upgrading soon, upgrading to tertiary. I moved here mostly for the ocean. I was a tourist who loved the region. I didn't know about the water quality problems. I spent a lot of time in the ocean, and I would prefer to have it healthy and protected. I appreciate your help and work on this. Thank you.
Board, Council, thank you. My name is Tim Tringali. I'm a board member of the San Luis Bay Surf Rider Foundation, and have spoken at previous meetings, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak here again. Quite simply, I'm fairly astounded that we haven't, one, committed to a wastewater treatment plant that provides us with the best available technology that tourism and our local community need to assure clean water. It's pretty surprising to me. So for the purposes of complying with the Clean Water Act, ensuring the health of the otters and the ocean wildlife outside of the otter population, ensuring the health of the locals, populace, including surfers, swimmers, lifeguards, etc., you name it. It's not just the surfers and the swimmers out there. We've got junior lifeguards supporting this community that are swimming in the water. I support a more timely upgrade of the wastewater treatment plant, in addition to an upgrade of a treatment plant that includes tertiary treatment. That is the wave of the future. I think each of these guys here would say that that's the truth. There's no question that without going tertiary, we're just putting ourselves behind anyways in the future. So let's kind of get to it. It must be examined. Without doing this, you might as well be ignoring the fact that regulations are going to be getting stricter, and that's not where we want to be 15, 20 years from now. We want to be ahead of the curve. We want to be assuring that we can provide the best water quality, the cleanest water quality for our local population and tourists. Thank you for allowing me to speak, and please don't ignore the church.
How fast and how much as pertains to the technology and the timeline. And on both of these issues, I think we understand that it does come down to money. That's perfectly legitimate. We understand you have ratepayers to consider, and it is a significant amount of money. I will restrict my remarks on this matter to the timeline. This board has said on several occasions that the reason why you wish to take twice as long as comparable upgrades for comparable plants along the coast is because you are concerned about the potential of fines from the water board should you miss any landmarks or take too long in the course of upgrading and overshoot your timeline. However, you have a settlement agreement which stipulates very plainly that any action that is beyond the control of this body shall not trigger fines, which means you'd really have to work at it to deliberately delay and derail your own project timeline in order to trigger fines. And with a nod to your neighbors to the south, that's pretty hard to do. If you did do that, the fines that you would incur are in the neighborhood of $100 a day, which are a significant reduction from the Water Board's traditional $5,000 to $20,000 a day, which because you have that very nice settlement agreement that makes that stipulation. I would suggest you contrast that remote possibility of fining with the absolute certainty, as we've all said many times, the ongoing increase in material and construction costs the longer that you take to complete this project. As to the technology, I will leave it to my colleagues to explain how the apparent mathematics of a secondary upgrade costing less than a tertiary upgrade may not be as it appears, but I believe that those are the two areas in which we're seeing the basis for your resistance to a shorter timeline and a tertiary treatment upgrade. And in both cases, what we're trying to convey to you is that it would actually be cheaper to shorten the timeline and go to tertiary instead of secondary treatment. Thank you.
Board of Directors, Council Members, thanks very much for having this meeting. Oh, sorry, my name is Sarah Corbin, and I can't use the microphone. I'm the Central California. Upgrading this facility to meet Federal Clean Water Act standards is vital. It's extremely important, and it will help to bring this, you know, this plant up to today's par, if you consider secondary treatment to be par. But if you consider the length of time that it takes to actually construct and build this whole facility, that's not par anymore. We've got a whole future to look forward to, and tertiary treatment is the future. That's how we're going to need to treat our water, so we may as well get with the program and get on that. Furthermore, water supply, you know, that's a huge issue here as well. And tertiary treatment can help increase the water supply for irrigation and other uses as well. But anyway, despite the back and forth that has kind of existed, as we know, debating environmental data, statistics, and, you know, there have been truths and myths that have developed, there really is a singular, simple truth, and that's the fact that both the people of Morro Bay and Cayugas and also the marine life that use the water here, We deserve a facility that operates to standards and that, you know, furthermore is working towards the future, but also that prioritizes the protection of health of all these life forms exposed to the discharge. Furthermore, the people in marine life here deserve this update sooner rather than later. I understand the desire to avoid any kind of incidental charges and not completing different project tasks on time. You obviously have a responsibility there to, you know, keep those incidental costs at a minimum. But at the same time, there's a compelling objective and responsibility to protect public health, and that requires you to move as quickly as you can. This requires setting an ambitious but reasonable timeline in which participants act with urgency that's inspired by the important responsibility. Thank you very much for hearing us today.
Good evening to all of you. I'm just a citizen who lives in Cambria, but we do share the same ocean. And my name is Lynn Harkins, and so I have not paid a lot of attention to this issue until recently. And my attention was drawn to it when I met a young man in San Luis Obispo, who's a student at Cal Poly, just one of their many followers or fans. And so it has been disturbing for me to learn how great their mortality rate is in this area. And though this particular article in Science Digest that just came this week does not pertain per se to sewage, they're talking about how the sense of smell in fish, when it's impaired, makes them unable to have an appropriate startle response to the presence of predation, to be unable to identify mate. In the instance of, these are rainbow trout and other salmon, that they can't find the stream. If their smell is impaired, that's how they find their spawning stream. And most of this is about agricultural pesticide runoff, but also heavy metals. So they're not completely things that are not possibly in a sewer stream as well. So lastly, I'll just say that when I came down here, I have to tell you, I was sure you must be talking about tertiary. I mean, I was just sort of drop-jawed when I found out this is about getting up to secondary. That's just the way I just think, like, what? We're a little bit behind the curve here, especially with the water shortage. And so I just want to sign on to the many fine comments made by people who have been following this more assiduously than I, but I shall be continuing with this. And thank you for your time and for hearing us.
Good evening. I'm Anjali Jaiswal on behalf of the Natural Resources Defense Council. I wanted to say that for the new JPA members who haven't had me speak before you on this issue, but we have been working on this issue since 2003 on getting the Morro Bay Cayucas Sewage Treatment Plant to upgrade its facility as fast as possible. Tonight, each one of you has the opportunity and the authority to resolve this issue once and for all. One of the key issues that has come up is funding. Well, I've done my homework on funding, and the funding is telling Morro Bay and Cayucas is telling you to upgrade now, to upgrade as fast as Morro Bay and Cayucas, including small community grants and small community loans. Staff should be looking at those opportunities. The other thing that's come up tonight is the role of EPA, the role of the regional board. Well, the people who are really responsible for this plant are sitting right here at this table. They are the members of the JPA. You hold the responsibility for the plant. You are the leaders of this community. As you know, or I hope you know, EPA wrote a letter to all of you this week. And the letter says a couple of interesting things that should weigh in favor of upgrading the plant as fast as possible, as well as to tertiary. First, EPA's letter says that EPA has concerns about the plant, has concerns about the otters. EPA also says, we are extremely concerned about the lack of progress over the last several months in understanding whether the dischargers, the JPA, are indeed intent upon a commitment and a transition to secondary wastewater treatment, and also referring to having recycled water use here in Morro Bay and Cayucas that would eliminate discharge into the ocean much of the year. Instead, that water would be captured and used for vegetation and for more valuable purposes. But importantly, in terms of being able to resolve this issue with the community. NRDC, yes, we have tried in many instances to meet with your staff, and we have been unable to do so. EPA has also tried. We've been unable to do so. EPA also explains in here, we believe that resolution of this issue could assist us in addressing both the potential issues regarding compliance with the Endangered Species Act and the public controversy regarding the continuance of the Clean Water Act, Section 301H waiver. EPA is looking to you to upgrade this plant as fast as possible, to upgrade this plant to tertiary. The timeline. As you know, as we've had many discussions before, this timeline is padded. There is padding in the schedule. It's evidenced by the fact that the plant is ahead of schedule right now. So that shows that when this board, right, this members right here in this room, directed staff, please bring us back a schedule that is as fast as possible. We're committing to adopting a schedule that is fast as possible. But the schedule is not as fast as possible, and your staff will tell you that themselves. Well, tonight you've heard from eight groups. You've heard from Sierra Club. You've heard from Defenders of Water. Meetings and these reports, and I appreciate the thoughtfulness in the upgrading process. But this has been going on since November. Secondary, tertiary, the information, Carollo's information, you'll see the reports repeat themselves. The January meeting was skipped. We have a March meeting. I urge you, between now and then, resolve to direct your staff to resolve these issues in terms of the time grade and come up with a real schedule that is fast as possible and an upgrade that is to tertiary. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to comment?
Hello, my name, I'll try this again. My name is Kent Wist. I'm a resident and homeowner of Morro Bay. And I guess in addition to all of the Surfrider members and everybody else you've heard speak today, I'd like to add my 2 or 3 cents, probably actually a little bit less. But I do appreciate your time in presenting to us some of the options available. And in sitting back there like the rest of my colleagues, it was odd to see that the consultants hadn't looked, or maybe it wasn't asked of them, to look into tertiary. I understand that we are working within a probably a constrained budget, constrained time frame in which to get a sewer upgrade. And I was very disturbed not to see that tertiary was even included. If in fact tertiary is on people's minds, it would be nice to see kind of a roadmap showing how that might fit into future plans, if in fact we can only afford to go to option one or option two for secondary. But it clearly is I think by the time you get this plant built, you know, in a matter of 3 or 4 years, the longevity of the plant alone would suggest that you'd probably want to advance the tertiary, since if you look at the environmental studies, environmental impact, where the EPA is going and everybody else, tertiary is going to be one of the future requirements. And given the lack of water that Morro Bay has access to, it would be nice to take some leadership in a county and show how we can use reclaimed water for other needs, park watering, what have you. So I would just support my colleagues in looking to get this thing done, get it done quickly, and probably look at other alternatives other than just settling out on secondary. Thanks.
I just promised these handouts, and I realized I forgot to hand them out. Okay.
We are interested in and would like to pursue. That's point one. Point two is the problem with tertiary treatment for us is going to be, what do you do with the water? It's going to require us to put an additional water main system in, maybe not a complete one, but the water's got to go somewhere. If you find an agricultural user who wants your water, you got to put pipes in to get it there. And so it's not as easy as it sounds. Yeah, full tertiary, we just do it. It doesn't go out in the ocean, but it's got to go somewhere. It's also, we've had a number of people, or someone tonight mentioned grants. When we started this, we were told there aren't a lot of grants out there that you can get. Hopefully all this new money we're talking about has come in. But if we don't get the grants and we decide to go, I mean, we are going ahead with this project. It's not a matter if we decide. It's a matter of what direction. You folks that live in Morro Bay, keep in mind, we're not paying for it. You are. I live here, I'm going to be paying my share. The people that live in Morro Bay are going to be paying for whatever we do, our share of it. And my fear is that when we come along and start raising your sewer rates, $25, $50, $75 a month, you're going to hear some pain, and there are going to be a lot of people that are negatively affected. That's what weighs on us. How do we do this without really hurting sections of the population? And we all agree, we want to do this. We want to do tertiary. I think we still all agree on that. But the point is, it's kind of a fine line we're walking. It's not like we're not interested. It's a matter of we've got to be able to pull it off.
To add to that, if we don't find a user for tertiary, then we're just going to put it in the ocean. And that's spending a lot of money to put water into the ocean that's been treated to tertiary treatment level. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's very expensive to do.
I would also say that since I got to watch the last meeting, this is the book they talked about. This is all tertiary stuff in here. It's all four alternatives. And there was a complete discussion of tertiary at the last meeting and only one person in the audience. So unless we make it available to you, perhaps on the public service website, all of the transcripts of the meetings or the minutes that we have that say, on this date in December, we did talk about tertiary options, okay? So that people who join the process at this point, and I fully encourage you to come to all the meetings. But if you join a meeting in the middle of the process, you may say we haven't done something when we actually did in December, looked at tertiary. And I would also repeat what... I do already have this letter from the EPA, and I noticed their concern, and I thank you for reminding the public about it. That's good. And I thank you. I really appreciate that NRDC presents this to us. I was looking on the internet last night trying to find where can I get the money to go to tertiary. It's $3 million more of money. Where's the money? So I will now investigate these and enlist even maybe some public help in looking at these sources. Thank you.
We all here agree that tertiary is the gold standard, and there's a lot of wonderful things that we can do with tertiary treated water, but we've already looked into customers for tertiary treated water. One thing about tertiary treated water is you can't use it on all vegetation or crops, so you have to kind of determine what kind of crop you're going to put in by what kind of water you're going to use. We also had one person that was interested in the tertiary treated water, one person, and that was the avocado farmer on the hill, and he said he would take it if we'd give it to him for free. The way I look at it, and I could be way off, but I see us probably increasing our sewer bill 100% to go to the remodernization of the current facility and probably 300 to 400% ratepayer increase for tertiary treatment.
Ma'am, I'd like to say that this giant increase in sewer is of our own making. That we have put this off for so long that we have allowed people to think that that's just the way it is, and because we keep postponing it, that sewer rate hasn't gone up. So we've waited until the very end when it's going to be astronomical to even begin addressing the issue. So I don't want to put the blame or burden on the public, but it needs to be where it falls, back on the decision makers, and not just the ones present, but those that have been on this board for the last 10 or so, 15, whatever, 20 years. So I don't think that it's the system or whatever that we can't reach the gold standard. Is that we've just waited so long. So I want to say that. The other thing I want to say is that in terms of noticing, and that people are just now noticing. Another thing that I want to say is there are benefits to doing our job at the gold standard that aren't just for us. And we've all talked about that. We all know that. It's about the environment. It's about our children. It's about people that have to get sick when they want to go recreate. That's crazy stuff. So whether it costs, $2 million or $20 million to dump clean water in the ocean or dump it on the land, it doesn't matter. It's our responsibility to do the health and safety of the community. And obviously not just the Morro Bay Cayucas community, but everyone that comes here to use it. So it doesn't matter if it costs $10 or if it costs $2 million, whether it goes in the ocean or on the land, you do the best you can do. And that's what we haven't talked about, is best available technology. We've been shown some technology and some adequate what we've done in the past, and now we've got the new clarifiers and basins and all that stuff. But have we looked at the best? Have we looked outside the normal? Have we looked at things that are going on in Arcata, all those other places that are doing weirdo things? I don't know that we've addressed that. I think we've done what's normal and conventional. And I don't know when we'll have that discussion, if we will, or if we're just assuming to stay conventional. Those are mostly my complaints.
I've got a question. There was a comment that the NRDC and EPA have tried to meet with us on various occasions. I'm looking at our two attorneys. Has that happened? What's been the problem?
I think Tim already explained that process that we went through. I think it's been 6 or 7 months ago. There were attempts to try to get the parties together through EPA and a funding of a mediator. That funding dried up, and there hasn't been any discussions lately. And because, like Tim said, we're waiting for the EPA and the Fish and Wildlife to issue that biological assessment. That's key to how we would proceed.
Okay. I'm concerned with, this resolution that we were given. We have said, ever since the last time when we did actually officially shorten the time, that we are dedicated to doing this as quickly as possible. We do want to do it as quickly as possible, and if we get it done in 5 years, we're all going to be very happy. However, we have to make sure that we have the funding to do it, and we have to make sure that we can do it as far as construction and all of the other things that are involved. And I have decisions before we can go ahead with other decisions, but we are moving ahead as quickly as possible. And so this, and I'm very encouraged tonight because, as many of you probably know, I've been a little upset with the NRDC on previous occasions, and I'm very encouraged by them actually coming forward and giving us something positive to work with. That's what I've been looking for from all the environmental groups, is, you know, instead of complaining about, you know, how long this is taking, and I'm not forgiving us for waiting as long as we did, perhaps it was too long, that's all in the past. But right now, we are working full forward on this project. And to complain about it and say, do it faster, do this, do that, instead, and not offer us any help in doing that, when it is going to be an extreme financial burden, is very frustrating as well. So this, I'm very encouraged by the fact that the research has been done, that there is an effort here to help us with the financial problems that we're going to encounter as we go through this. So I appreciate that. And if we can keep that kind of cooperative work going on this, then it's going to be an easier process for everyone. So, as I said, none of us are fighting this. We all want to do it. It's just how can we do it and be the best to our ratepayers as well as to the environment. So that's, I'm encouraged by this. I'm feeling a lot better about things tonight. Thank you.
Rick, did you want to say one other thing?
Just something that hasn't been brought up by anybody, and the fact is our decision is going to affect not only the ratepayer, but it's going to affect the people that provide us revenue to our city to make it work, and that's the businesses. Businesses are struggling. They're barely making it now, and they're the ones that are going to be impacted the most by these rate increases and when we talk about tertiary treatment and how expensive that is. So there's a whole lot of thought we have to give to this, and like I say, it's just not going to affect the ratepayers or the surfers. It's going to affect businesses and a lot of other folks.
Okay, comments from Cayucas. Just bring your checkbook. I'd like to make a couple of comments. First, regarding tertiary. And thank you, Melody. Yes, we did have a meeting on tertiary. We recall that. And I'm sorry, sir, you weren't here at the time. That was in December. The process that we're going through, we have a little schedule here. Tertiary, we discussed at the last meeting. This meeting was to discuss secondary. David, correct me. So in the next 2 months, we'll see what our we will be making that decision and we'll be moving on. And I think that, to me, is in the spirit of moving this thing as long as fast as possible. There were some comments earlier about how long does the construction take, and our estimates were 18 months to 2 years. My question is, how long does it take to get to construction? I know people that can't get their house started in 8 years, can't get started. So, again, our goal was to do this as fast as possible, and I think we're committed to doing that. I heard some comments tonight that said that staff will tell us we're not, and it's going to be a sorry day when I hear that from staff, at least from my side of it. So in my thinking, we are moving along as fast as possible. We're doing everything that we can. It's the permitting process, the getting there, and the making of these decisions is what takes time. In my mind, I could tell you what, in my mind, I have already a clear picture of where we're going to go with this thing. We're looking at the ditch, as I want to call it, being probably the most viable and the most flexible and leaving us the most alternatives for the future. It's the lesser operating cost. It gives you every opportunity to add tertiary at any time in the future. That's what we learned at the last meeting. So that then becomes a matter of, is funding available? And we'll do that as soon as somebody's going to write us a check. So Cayucas supports the concept of the tertiary treatment. We'd like to see that happen. but we know that we're under the gun to complete the secondary treatment plan, and we'll do that as fast as possible and leave open the options to go to tertiary. So if you made me decide right now tonight, that's what I'd say we're going to do. I can't make that decision tonight because I haven't really looked at what it's going to cost and how we're going to be able to accomplish that in the two communities. So maybe I'm just dreaming, but trying to be responsible to the task at hand, we can't just shoot in the dark and say, oh, yeah, let's just go do that on a whim until Corolla start designing. We want to start construction in a year. It just takes longer to do it. But I did want to express that Cayucas is visible. You may remember that, those who Absolutely. You were there, that was in the auditorium at the Cayucas Grammar School. So no one's forgotten what the mission is here, and no one's forgotten when that mission assignment was made. And I'd like to personally thank Corolla for their part in this, moving it along. David, Tracy, Eric, and welcome aboard, Steve. It's an ugly process sometimes. But if you want to really get beat up, then raise your rates, and you'll see a different crowd out here, and you won't like them at all. But I appreciate the comments from the people who did speak tonight, and that's how I kind of see the future. I want to see it move as fast as possible.
Mr. Enns, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Have pretty much stated, I think, probably a consensus on Cayucas' part in terms of laying the groundwork for secondary and then at some point adding tertiary. I think where Morro Bay has in the past come from has been go straight to tertiary. So is that the discussion that we will have in March?
Yes.
Okay. And then this report that is going to be brought back in June, is that based on the outcome of the debate in March?
Yes, it is.
And then what happens between March and June? Nothing?
Corolla works hard.
And what is it that you will be doing?
March.
You have to use a mic.
We're going to put together the options, tertiary, secondary, biosolids, and bring
it towards you.
Just like that.
I mean the switch comes up.
Are we?
I thought maybe it was just me. March, we're going to bring you the packages so that you can look at them, digest them, get a feel for what they are, what they cost as a complete package, two or three or four packages. You're going to give us some direction. April, we're going to come back after your direction, and we're going to say, okay, you gave us some direction. Now, here's what you asked us to go back and look at. Now, have we done what you asked? Are you ready to tell us, finalize the report with this information? And then May and early, we will go back, finish the report, bind it. Here's how much it costs. You'll say, I want to do this project at this cost, and we'll have some initial estimates on the rate impact, and then you'll say, move forward with this. Moving forward with this project means go finish the environmental work, finish the financial work, make it happen. So your commission right now is select a project that you tell your staff and us to go make it happen. So that's what is happening. We're beginning the financial actual revenue program so that we're ahead of the curve. So once you tell us this is the job, we'll be very very close to actually having real rate impacts on that project. But we got to get a project that you tell us to move forward with. Tertiary, secondary, ditch, trickling filter.
I guess my confusion is if the different options change make the rates variable, and we want to look at that, but we don't know what the rates are going to be, then how can we make a decision?
You will have initial opinions on the rate impact, but the rate study won't be done that says, here's how much I'm going to charge your users. Mm-hmm. You will have information on the rates, so you can make a comparative decision of which option you want to go with.
And,
but
and
the
that
I'm sorry, the actual rates are a financial process that how much cash do you have, how much, you know, other methods do you have. So the actual rate could be completely different depending on how much cash on hand you have, where you're going to get the money from. Each of you may have a different answer on rates.
And so the finance report that you're bringing us is only about rates and it doesn't include money like this? Does it include the money also?
It does not include any conclusions on grants. I have to tell you right now, I recognize most of those mm-hmm. grant numbers. I don't know of a single one of them that you would qualify for right now, but we should make those calls again, find out, Does Morro Bay qualify for any of these grants? I mean, we should always be making those calls to see if anything's changed at those proposition, you know, or grant things, make it fit in those grants.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying you're not making those calls. We need to make
Commissioned to making those calls right now. No, we can be commissioned to make those calls. I'm sorry, Bill. Go ahead.
An important component of that is what he said at the end. Any of these grants want to know a specific project description. So that's our first step, is what he said is what happens in the next couple of months, is once you have a specific project description, then you're able to see if it qualifies and how it qualifies. I would say right off the top, though, we don't qualify for the small community wastewater grant program because of our medium income is above what's stated in that. But they're all we do continue to, and we will, and we might even bring forward to you a proposal on hiring an outside consultant to specifically look at that. But we've got to get to the specific project first.
Anyone else? Again, thank you, David, Tracy, Eric. Since this item, we're not taking any action on this tonight, that concludes this topic. We have just a couple of other things to do under item C, new business. Number one, the invoice. And that's just something Cayucas needs to do. We just need a motion to approve. And Bonnie, I had two reports here with two different numbers. Was it 76,963.50? Were they? Oh, they are. Okay. Were they both of them? We need to do both? Okay. Let's do them both together. Turn your mic on.
I make a motion that we approve these invoices as given.
Is your microphone on?
Okay, the motion was to approve both the first quarter and the second quarter invoices. The numbers were $76,963.50 and $82,844.49 respectively.
I'll second the motion for the two invoices.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion's unanimous. Next scheduled joint meeting will be.
Excuse me, do we need to. The first quarter late for the meeting, and plus one of the meetings was skipped. Mm-hmm. So we just put the two of them together.
I see. Thank you.
Okay, next scheduled meeting should be March 15th. Thank you very much. And we'll see David and Eric.
Tell all your friends.
Will Steve be coming back to enjoy this?
Would you like him to come back?
Sure, you
sure.
Bet.
Then he's with us for two more months.
Good. Well, you'll see how this all comes together then.
He has to go back and be a student.
I think that'll be a good experience to see how this.
Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Write paper on there.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
We're adjourned. How about you?
Okay, we'll go with that. Thanks.
I was really you vote.
Yeah.
Robert.